Welcome to Challenge Accepted. I'm your host, Stephanie Lucas, a marriage and family therapist by trade and mom to a daughter with hearing loss. I'm creating a space for parents and caregivers of special needs families to find support, validation, and acceptance by sharing stories of a broad range of families with unique challenges. While this isn't therapy and does not replace the advice of a medical provider, we'll dive into the tougher parts of parenting together and join a team of support from others who get it. This next half hour is about you, your experiences, your emotions, and being allowed to take up space as a parent and human being. So hands in, ears on, hearts open, team, this is Challenge Accepted. Hey team, well, the long-promised interview with my husband has finally come to pass. I was a little bit nervous. I wondered if it would be hard to come up with things to discuss, since we've both lived the same experience. Yeah, I was really excited to get to interview him more formally on his take of our story. You'll hear how humor is a pretty integral part of our relationship, and where my story from the last minisode and his story intersect. Our visions aren't exactly the same, but the puzzle pieces seem to fit together to form the tapestry of our family experience. I loved diving deep with him into how he processed his emotions, and the personal growth he found in learning to balance caring for our girls and taking care of himself. Enjoy.
Grant Lucas, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Stephanie Lucas. It's nice to meet you.
Yeah, first time, you know, just getting to know each other here. Well, our listeners, all 20 of them, have heard a bit of our story from my side, but I would love for you to tell what your experience has been like as Riley's dad.
Challenging in a good way. That's, you know, you don't ever want to be complacent or content or bored. So there's always something going on. But it was for sure one of the hardest things to, I just gave myself goosebumps thinking about it. It was one of the hardest things for sure to hear about what was happening, what could happen, what to do, options. I mean, it was heart-wrenching. I mean, obviously, I was heartbroken for you. I was heartbroken for me, but my biggest thing was Riley. So we have an older daughter, obviously. I'm sure this is news to you. We have an older daughter. And I love her to death. I really do. When we heard about Riley, though, something clicked inside of me, just sort of subconsciously, that I got to give her so much attention and care that I sort of stretched myself so thin, and it really took its toll on me. But I feel like after 2 years, we're finally starting to get to a balance. We're starting to find some happiness, comfort, really progressing in everything with her and her speech and her signing, Addie, and her patience and care for Riley and us as parents of a hard of hearing child. You're gonna make me cry, and we're only 2 minutes in.
I thought that was a possibility. You say something clicked in you. What was that like?
I don't know. I mean, and it's not like when it happens, you're like, okay, now I'm gonna do this. Just something instinctually, or I don't know if animalistic is the right word, but just you hear some, like, your child is having something really difficult, maternal or paternal, an instinct kicks in where you really want to help them get to this, you know, quote unquote normal state. And I think that's just what clicked in. So I was up in the nights as much as I could, because I know you were taking it hard too, and you needed rest after she was born, obviously. So I was trying to take on a huge load, and it just became a habitual thing. So I was trying to take care of her during the night. I was trying to be as present and communicative with Riley as I could during the day. And I didn't think much about me or as I did about her and you and Addie. So something clicked, and whether it was a good thing for her, I hope it was, it wasn't the best thing for me personally. I'm sure it wasn't too great on you. I know it wasn't too great on you, but I don't know. I didn't realize
it was. Any mom would.
Oh, for sure.
A dad who takes all of the night shift.
But when I like shift my attention so, you know, so much to another individual, it takes it away. You can't expand your attention that much. So something has to be taken away. And I think that's kind of what happened with me and my relationship with you and Addie. But fortunately, I have found a way to sort of find a balance with everybody.
How did you know that was what was going on? Because I talked a little bit in my last mini-sode about kind of your anxiety and when you had that first panic attack. But what felt like the moment of like, I'm not calibrated here?
I think, man, it took over a year before I really started to think about it. But after, you know, my personal stuff, I had my own form of depression, if you want to call it that, whether it was, you know, just a paternity thing. What is it?
Paternal postpartum depression.
Paternal postpartum. And then I had my own, you know, because I wasn't caring for myself as much. So after about a year of that and talking to you, talking to others, I just sort of sat down and thought about, you know, I don't think it happened just because it happened. I feel like it's a causation type thing. So I was trying to think about what was a trigger that kind of led this way. And I realized, especially after my wife, you might know her, she pointed out how I was stretching thin, how I wasn't, you know, behaving like I used to, acting like I used to. So I just realized, oh, it's because I'm trying to stretch myself too much. So I don't have anything to give after a while. So I tried to make a conscious effort to care for myself as much as I did for Riley and you and Addie.
How did you do that? How did you figure out how to care for yourself? Because I know a lot of parents, especially moms who like that instinct is always there to like give everything, can't figure out how to find that center again.
Well, one thing was just going outside. You know, it also came at a time, I don't know if this is fortunate or not, but when I realized what I had to do and care for myself more, it came at a time when I felt like I was starting to put on a little weight. So I decided I was going to start running and working out, and that kind of became my escape. So that cared for me. It allowed me to get away. You know, every couple of weeks I'd try to go out with friends, whether it's lunch or, you know, a happy hour thing or something, just something to take your mind away. Date nights was a big thing for us too. I mean, we talk about the kids when we're on date night, but it was just to get away outside of the house, not necessarily away from the kids, just outside of the confinement of our home where we live. And at the time we both worked, I still work here. But yeah, just escaping the cage, I guess, just to have some rec time. You know what I mean?
Great. Did it feel like, because we had, so where I'm at in the mini-sodes, we are just starting the research program. So we haven't even gotten to the implant or progression of loss or any of that yet. Did that hit in waves? Did it feel like it all just kicked in as soon as she had hearing loss, or were there different points at which things were difficult in different ways?
That's a good question. I don't think I've ever thought about that. I mean, when we learned over the course of several visits to hearing doctors, when we learned and when it was confirmed of her hard of hearing, it was a huge punch. It was probably more, I think it was less gradual and more you know, just one big hit. So when we learned that, I mean, I clammed up. Mm-hmm. Like I couldn't process it. I couldn't figure out why. I was, you know, in my brain sort of blaming myself in some way. I don't know how, like, how could this have happened? Where did it come from? We did something and it was just so hard. And it was the first time in my life where I really felt that way. And I think just from there, it kind of just planted, like, this seed planted in my head that things are going to be hard. And I, for some reason, figured, well, we might as well expect the worst. And I think that immediately made my brain think, all right, well, then if you're expecting the worst, then you should behave as such. Like, not have a positive outlook, not be optimistic. So I think it was more a one punch thing than a gradual thing.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually over time, you start to realize that you can't think of worst case. If you think of worst case so much, you're never going to believe a best case can happen.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just living presently as best as possible while thinking, or while believing, because I do believe things will get better. Having a worst case scenario, just it's not good for anybody, no matter how good your intentions are.
Right. It's hard to focus on the joy of what is happening if you're constantly thinking about what's possible.
Yeah.
What do you feel like? Because a lot of the interviews I've done are either a mom and dad together or a mom. What do you feel like is unique to being the dad? Because I think you process emotions like a pretty stereotypical male, if you can say that. But I think that's really important, right? Because the way that happens culturally is not to share, not to be open, and not to be seen. And there may be moms listening to the podcast who are like, how do I think that's exactly what's happening with my husband. How do I get in there, right? How do I crack that nut?
Well, I think having two girls has softened me a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I've become more, there's still times where I'm not sharing because I'm a man, you know? But I mean, I don't think anyone necessarily cracked me. It's just, when I became more aware of what was going on around me, even before Riley was born, like, you know, I have a wife, a daughter, friends, family. They need to know what's happening, whether it's good or bad. I mean, sometimes it's for me, I think it's okay to not share. But if I'm feeling sad or scared or happy or joyful, I want to share it in some way, whether it's playing with kids, playing games with you like we used to, or watching shows, going on date nights, stuff like that. For me, I share my emotions not with words necessarily. You know, I don't say I feel this way. I share my emotions in my actions, and it's a subconscious thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that was very helpful. That feels like a man explaining how emotions work.
A question we have all pondered. But I think that makes sense if you look at it from the aspect of when that wall hit for you, what showed up was actions, right? I mean, I even in the minisode, the way I wrote it, I don't know if it came across, but like, you had trouble letting anyone else take care of Riley, including me. And the way I said it was, you had trouble sharing the load. And I think that the baseline there is thinking, oh, you couldn't take any on. And I was like, no, he couldn't hand any over. And having to, you know, sometimes emotions, or maybe that female way of expressing, comes out so differently, but seeing how that's how you processed and that's how you were living out how you were feeling, which was really guilty at the time.
Yeah, guilt. being present, like it I don't know. There was nothing that really said, or there was nothing I really thought that said, I'm going to do all of this. Like it was just kind of instinctual. If she cried at night, I got up, like my body just did it. It just became a thing. It's almost, looking back now, it was almost selfishly unselfish. You know, parents get joy in helping kids in trying times or bringing them joy. And I realized that I kind of took that away from you. Like I was trying to be unselfish by giving you a break or letting you sleep, letting you relax, but I didn't allow you to have that time too. So you didn't step in because I wasn't handing it over. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a moment, I don't remember, how old was she? Maybe a year and a half old, where Addie was at daycare, Riley was home. And this was about the time when I consciously realized I was stretching myself too thin and everything was not going as well as I would like. And I clicked. Addie was at daycare, Riley was home. We fell asleep because that's just what you do when you stretch yourself so far. Mm-hmm. And then when I woke up, it was an hour past when I usually pick Addie up, and I cried on the way to picking Addie up. I cried on the way back, putting Riley down to bed. I was crying and Riley couldn't fall asleep because of it. Mm-hmm. And I think that moment was pent up emotions and feelings coming out at once because I felt like one terrible thing happened. Even though it wasn't even that bad, Addie was happy. The daycare was completely understanding. They were still open for another hour. But I think in that moment, I realized I can't let it all build up mm-hmm. because something like this is going to happen again or worse.
And you still wouldn't give me the baby. In that moment, you're sitting there crying. Move. And I was like, can I have the baby?
I could not move.
No. I think too, I mean, anyone would be jealous of having a partner who helped as much as you do and would love that level of support. And you say it was selfish of you because I didn't get the kids as much, but I also missed you, right? Like you were gone, whether you were exhausted or you were taking care of the kids, and recognizing that like, that relationship is so foundational to our self-care too, and figuring out how to recalibrate that.
Yeah. And it was really hard. And I think it was all, I mean, the turning point I feel like was all around that time. I think Riley was a year and a half old.
Mm-mm. She was a year and a half when she got her implant.
She was less than a year old. Yeah. And I think it was all around that time when things started to turn, because after that night, it was within the next week. We had talked about what I was doing and how it wasn't good for me. Mm-hmm. It wasn't good for the girls, really, if you think about it. And it especially wasn't good for us. So we started talking more. We started going on date nights more when we could, until stupid thing happened in 2020. And we started finding shows to watch together. It sounds dumb, and even some people might think it sounds lazy, but it's just an activity to do together. You know, we started watching Survivor, and I think we started watching The Baking Show first. Mm, and then we started watching Survivor, and we just found joy in watching it together. And it wasn't just watching, like we'd talk crap to the people who were calling.
Like, official commentary. No,
that cake is falling down. That is so bad. Ugh, that doesn't look good. But yeah, I think that turning point, that was a turning point for me personally, and for us, you and me. And I think it's been super since.
Yeah, I think when you think about what couples do under stress, some couples fight more and some couples fight less, right? We're the people who go inside and are, both of us, I think, are like, I can't start this fight right now. We're too stressed out. It's not worth it. Right.
Yeah. We're not outward fighters. Mm-hmm. We're like, she's really quiet and cleaning a lot. What did I do?
But you would act like you didn't notice.
It's because I wanted you to outward fight. It's a double-edged sword. There's no outward fighting. And also, I'm not going to talk right now because nothing good's going to come from it.
Right.
But we, but I mean,
recognizing that, like, that is also a dangerous place to be, though, right?
Yeah.
It's easy for that to just become what happens. So when you talk about having a show to watch together, like, that's an invitation to engage when our safe place at that time was to not engage because
we were. I don't think we do any of that. I don't even know the right term I'm gonna make, that inward argument, the inward fighting. I don't think we do that too much anymore. Like, we do say what we're feeling or thinking when it feels appropriate, or in my case, when it feels justifiable. I don't know. Like, we have opened up more, we have engaged more, and yeah,
we're also less overwhelmed, though.
Yeah, for sure.
There's a sense of normalcy, so there's not as many
hot and buttons. It takes so much time, for sure. I mean, it's not a bad thing necessarily, but people who want to think, or people who believe and know that they can fix, you know, their own personal relationships with their significant mm-hmm. other, everyone wants an instant fix, but there is no instant fix. Like, it takes time. Mm-hmm. But it feels so good when it fixes.
So what would you say to a dad who is at the beginning of the journey that you've been on?
Yeah, if they were in the same position that I was?
Sure.
Process it. Process your emotions, not just internally, but outwardly. You need to tell someone, particularly your significant other, what's going on in your brain and in your heart and your gut. Keeping it inside so pent up, it cracks you. Mm-hmm. I had always, as you well know, I had always had a weird self-brag about, I haven't cried since I was like 8 years old. And, 3 or 4 years ago, I don't remember how long, I had like my first cry, and it felt good, you know, especially when you can tell someone about it and why. Like, it's okay to have those emotions and let those emotions ride. And also just to have hope, believe in hope, and be optimistic, because never feels that way right away, but when you have that outlook that the trajectory is going to get better from where you are, then you can follow that road really easily. Like, it's easy to see where you're driving when you shine a light on it. Oh, that was good. That's a bumper sticker.
I think your story is helpful too for dads, because oftentimes not feeling the emotion or not showing the emotion, the narrative behind that is I am protecting my family, or I am
making it's like, family strong. I want to show them that I can be the rock.
Right. But recognizing when it becomes too much that you're actually not protecting your family, right? That you might, that it's okay to not be the rock because we need you to be okay. And that's a strong thing too. What would you say to people who are married or in a co-parenting relationship who feel like they were where we were at that time?
How do you mean?
People who maybe feel very distant from their spouse, or who feel like they can't get in there and connect, or feel that they're doing the my kid has a disability thing alone because of the way that they're carrying that. How would you reflect on
what to Well, for one, it's on both parents. Like, it's not a one-way street. Well, if there's distance, while you could argue one might be the bigger catalyst for there being a distance, the other person might be distant too for their own reasons. Mm-hmm. I mean, one thing that really helped me stay engaged as much as I could early on, and especially lately, it was being included. Like when we take Riley to doctor's appointments or to just go into the park or something like that, just being included in certain trips or errands, you know, it keeps you engaged with everything. Being included in the things we needed to do for Riley, being included for just something simple like dropping Addy off. And then between partners, it doesn't have to be a big extravagant thing. I mean, one of our biggest helping steps was finding something small to do together. So watching a TV show together, going on walks, date nights. You don't have to ask the hard question to ask, the ones people are usually afraid to ask, which is, you know, tell me how you're feeling. You seem this way. Why do you feel this way? Just, I think, small tidbit things that, I don't know how else to say it. You know, rather than just coming out and asking, why are you doing what you're doing? Why are you behaving the way you are? I think you can, I don't know if chipping away is, you can kind of chip away at whatever wall is up by just including the other in some sort of activity. You might have an agenda behind what you're doing, but you don't have to tell them that.
Can I challenge that a little bit?
Sure.
During that time, it was so obvious, especially to your therapist wife, right, what was happening, that the chip away method felt very isolating, because I felt like it was slipping away.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, why aren't you grabbing, right? And you're like, I'm chipping away. I know that you're a chip awayer. So yeah. I knew what you were doing, but it felt like a little scary of like, I don't think that's going to work.
Well, and again, it's a two-way street. You know, you can't rely on one person just to chip away. The other person also needs to let that wall fall.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's unfortunate or fortunate, I don't know. I had a breaking point that made me realize that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't, obviously, you don't want that to happen. You can't rely on that to happen. So there does need to be some sort of bring it to your attention. Allowing yourself to be vulnerable allows that wall to come down enough, at least at first, and then down altogether. So I think that the biggest thing, and this is mostly for dads really, is just, and it goes back to what I was saying about letting yourself feel emotions, let yourself feel vulnerable. That's okay. I mean, it's not a thing that you should carry yourself, let alone have to.
Mm-hmm.
You need to share. You need to have someone else grab the other side of that luggage and carry it with you.
Yeah, that's like we work together to make sure chipping away isn't slipping away.
Right.
Bumper sticker.
That's a bumper sticker. It's a t-shirt.
You said being included was part of what helped you stay present. I am curious about that from a provider perspective, because you were able to attend sessions and doctor's meetings in the beginning, and then Corona hit. Did it feel like there's anything that went well in terms of being included, or times where you were like lost or not invited?
Well, I'm not one to let myself be invisible in any room. If I'm in the room, you'll know. It's like, an elephant walks in a room. It's like, okay, he's in there. No, I mean, when I was included, my personality came out. Because when I was included, that wall went down and I was able to be myself. I think it was mostly just, you know, if I was alone and I got to let my dumb brain think and my dumb brain kept putting the wall back up, being included allowed, you know, like when you're driving, you get to roll down the window on a straightaway highway. It just opens the door.
Very true. All right. Well, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Stephanie Lucas. This has been a wonderful treat. I can't wait to tell my wife how I met you.
About the amazing experience you had. Do you have any final thoughts for our listeners today?
I was always the, you know, thought men were men, you know? And now I'm proud of not being that. You know, it's good to not be the, you know, feel a tear coming and you wipe away with not letting anybody see it. Yeah, just allowing yourself to be vulnerable actually makes you happier. But that's why you have people around with earballs who can listen.
Right. Relationship is your safeguard when you're in that vulnerable place.
Yep.
All right. Well, go pick up our oldest daughter and I'll see you for pizza tonight.
It's pizza night.
Woo, that was so fun. Many thanks to Grant for his time and willingness to sit with me and reflect for a bit. I really love how he talks about how he processed his emotions through behaviors and actions. I think that's really common with men, and that we as their partners can feel like we are unseen or that we can't connect because we want to process our emotions verbally with them. It provided a sweet little peek into how to find those more masculine emotional processes in all of this, and really emphasize the importance of not letting that work be invisible or forgotten. I also think his reflection on overstretching himself is a really powerful reminder. As women, we say to ourselves over and over again, oh, I should take care of myself, it benefits the family. But when you flip the script on those gender roles and see a man overstretching himself, we break through some of those cultural beliefs that overworking ourselves in the care of others is some sort of badge of honor, and see the true impact on the individual and the family when we actually do this. Just because women are more culturally programmed to give their lives away in the service of others doesn't make it any better for us than it is for a man. If you're a dad and you connected with this interview, I'd love to hear from you and maybe even interview you. I think it's so powerful to hear men normalize their emotions and express pride in learning to embrace the experience. Talk about hot. If you're a woman wondering how I talk to my husband about all of these things, I really recommend the book Fed Up by Gemma Hartley. It discusses the emotional labor that women often carry and the value of inviting men into that work in a respectful and truthful way. Many thanks to my husband for being willing to come share and for, you know, everything else. As you can tell from the interview, he's the MVP of our team. Until next time, friends.
Thank you so much for joining me for this episode. I hope it was inspiring and encouraging for you and your journey. If you enjoyed it, I love it if you could share it with your friend, subscribe for future content, and leave us a 5-star review. This will help us grow our reach so others can join our community of support. If you would like to share your unique story with the Challenge Accepted community, feel free to reach out to me on social media, Stephanie Lucas MFT, on Instagram or Facebook. Thanks for being a part of our team.